So I'd like to read again the chant that I chose for tonight that I'd like to talk about. The Many and the One by Wu Men, who is the compiler of our collection of koans, the woman koan, or the gateless barrier, the gateless gate. With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, everything is separate and different. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, everything is separate and different. The moon and the clouds are the same. Mountains and valleys are different. All are blessed. All are blessed. Is this one? Is this two? So last night, after Bob's really touching Dharma talk, Teisho, during the Dharma dialogue afterwards, there was some discussion, and I think Melissa kind of led it during at that point, which had to do with the snow, and we have yet another storm visiting us right this moment, this sense that this is a very unusual weather for us, and there are unusual things happening throughout the globe, and this notion about how we as practitioners, we as followers of the way, how do we relate to this? How do we relate to other, right? Self in relationship to other. And there was some mention also of the first step in the Eightfold Path. The Buddhist Eightfold Path is right view. So the Four Noble Truths, the fourth one is the Eightfold Path. And the very first one is right view. And sometimes this can be called right perspective. And so these weather calamities are happening here with the cold and the snow and then the drought out west and the fires. And it seems like just a few years ago when people were talking about climate change, it was something that we like sort of had to believe in, that there wasn't anything visible or tangible. It was ozone in the atmosphere, but now just all of these happenings and stressful, of course, and likely to increase, I would say. So the scientists tell us, and maybe not so much my generation, but certainly the millennials are going to be facing quite a lot of this. And so this perspective, right, it is not unique to Buddhism to have this broader perspective so that we, maybe our own self and our own problems seem not quite so insurmountable when we get a broader perspective of life and the world in which we live. And there have been studies that actually as we age, we get happier. And people who are quite old tend to be the happiest of all because most things are no big deal. They have been through a lot, have had a lot of challenges and calamities and are able to meet things with that kind of broader perspective. But I think what is unique about Zen practice is that it's not simply about having perspective on the other. It is about coming to realize for ourselves that the idea of self and other is provisional. And I think Wu Men expresses this so beautifully in his poem here. The moon and the clouds are the same, mountains and valleys are different. The provisional nature of differentiating between self and other. And this is not something that can be grasped with the intellect. It actually makes no sense at all. And when we read this piece from Wu Men, you know, with realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are one family. That really can seem chaotic to the mind that's used to being able to categorize. But what Zen invites us to do is to experience this truth that there is no separation between self and other, and there is separation between self and other. And so this invitation to awaken, to experience it for ourselves, can happen, you know, very suddenly, where you know, the walls come crashing down, or can happen little by little, the walls crumbling little by little. I always love the Buddha's statement on his awakening, where he said, "I see you, builder of this house, and you won't build it anymore." And sometimes when I am in the process of building my own house, I see this little gray-haired old woman carrying this big cement block, and she kind of looks over her shoulder at me with this look of, do I have to keep going? And sometimes I say, yep, you gotta keep going there. And then sometimes I can just say, yeah, you could put that cement block down for now. And so this little crumbling that takes place, when we're able to see through the way we build up this house, the way we build up these stories about who we are and who the other is. There's in the book that Dogen gave the instructions to the monastery cook, he said that fools look at themselves as though seeing another. Developed men and women look at others and see themselves. So we're all in this together. You and me and the whole earth, that this hanging, impossibly it seems, in the vastness of space, and so fragile and so precious. And when we lay down in the grass, remember when there was grass? In the summer, and there we are. Is it one? Is it two? Blessed, blessed. Thank you. So now is time for our Dharma dialogue, and please make yourselves comfortable.
Your image of the gray-haired person carrying the great big concrete block, and like, I'm that gray-haired person. And sometimes, you know, and sometimes I'm carrying the concrete bucket, and then I realize it's a marshmallow.
Yeah. Such a... Yeah, these... So beautiful when we can see it, right? Yeah. When we can see it. So, and... I was reminded in the earlier Dharma dialogue that when we're in the, you know, some strong hell realm, that it may be impossible to see, right? You know, so quite a blessing when we're able to see that old person carrying that that rock. Yeah. Mm. Thank you.
I love that quote from the Buddha. I hadn't heard that exact one before, but I see you, builder of the house, you won't be doing that anymore. And of course, that's actually not true.
I won't. Oh, yes, I will.
But to see that process that is so... so very near, so constant in this storytelling, this construction of the self, and what a blessed thing when we see that and can see that the concrete block is a marshmallow, or we can put it down, or we can, you know, whatever we do, mm-hmm. but quite a moment. Mm-hmm.
One more thing. When you were talking about those studies that show that people get happier as they get older,
yeah.
That's part of the research that I do.
Is it? Oh, yes. Okay. I didn't misstate it, hopefully.
One of the primary ideas that they're sort of showing is so related to our practice. It's one of the big reasons why people get happier is they get a sense of more limited time.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're younger, you know, we don't realize we have that terminal diagnosis. And as we get older, literally, they've been able to demonstrate that people have a sense mm-hmm. when they get into their 40s and certainly in their 50s that life is really short.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the thing that generates this sense of, oh, then maybe I don't have to sweat so many things. You know, and what's amazing about our practice is that we can do that at any age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we're lucky if we encounter it in our youth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny how much we are terrified by death in some way, but yet that this sense of limited time brings a sense of joy and appreciation. Not like, oh, it's getting worse, it's getting closer, it's getting closer. I mean, of course, there is that edge too, but that pervasively the response, our response as human beings to the reality of our death is appreciation of where we are. I was talking with George, my teacher, once, and we were talking about death, and he said, actually, it would be horrifyingly terrible to know you would never die. I mean, imagine if everyone else would come and go and you would never die. It would be unbearable.
There's a verse in a poem by Swinburne, who was not really a serious or philosophical poet. Just that point, from too much love of living, from hope and fear set free, we thank with brief thanksgiving whatever guides may be, that no life lives forever, that dead men rise up never, that even the weariest river winds somewhere safe to see.
I love that. Even the weariest
river? Even the weariest river winds somewhere safe to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
There's also plenty of examples, though, of people who, even in their old age, are terrified of death
mm-hmm.
and don't welcome it, mm-hmm. don't feel mm-hmm. the gratitude, but feel the panic.
Yeah.
And I wonder, too, sometimes about younger people now, the kind of the burden of you can do anything, you can be anybody, and how awful that is, in a way. The wide open possibilities, and I've just seen so much stress in young people sometimes feeling that there's kind of no path for them because there's every path, and how are they ever going to measure up? It's a particular kind of stress that feels like it's even, it just feels so widespread with many of the younger people I've met, my kids and their friends particularly. Those are the ones I'm closest to, and I see that.
I was a little bit disturbed by one of the passages in the meal chants that says, oh, here it says, after the morning meal.
Yeah.
Let us pray that all beings may accomplish whatever tasks they are engaged in and be fulfilled. I realize how much of my life and people around me is spent trying to accomplish something. And the idea that you're not trying to accomplish anything is just anathema. And I think one of the things that makes older people happier is that at some point you kind of give yourself permission not to accomplish anything else. My husband was ill for a number of years before he died, and we had lived all over the country, so there were a lot of good friends and relatives that I didn't see much for a long time because we couldn't travel. So the past couple of years, most of what I did was go to see people all over the place and have people come see me. And then the year turned and I thought, well, now, you know, you have to settle down and do something. You can't just be going to see people and having people come to see you. And I felt kind of bad about going to see people because and I would say, you know, I'm sorry to just kind of pile in on you. But after the fact, many of these far-flung people said, thank you so much. It was so good of you to come all this way. And I mean, that was the way I felt about people coming to see me. And that's not accomplishing anything. We need those others that make us ourselves contribute.
To each other. Thank you.
Well, and this is the Sangha, you know. The Sangha doesn't mean just people who practice Buddhism, but Sangha is our human connections, you know, these fellow travelers through the years, so precious. Remember when, and isn't it a lovely day today? Such a blessing.
I always notice that when some old friends get together, you know, they might tell the same story that you've heard 100 times, but I think it's just the laughing together, you know, that's what it's for. Who cares what the story is? You know, just being with people who, you know, there isn't this division, you know, there's just the laughter of being, you know, with someone you love, and
I think, I'm noticing something rising up in me. There's a subtext to your talk that I think is pointing to what you're talking about, Susan, that I'm really happy to hear. You know, that this is this one, is this two, that, you know, that in connection there's no division. And some of us have been talking, and actually you mentioned it in your talk, and Bob, and Janine, the division, you know, old people feel this way, young people feel that way. I think it's important not to get stuck in those categories, because I can think of people in very fulfilled young people and really depressed older people. They're, so to box anybody into categories. Mm-hmm. And I, there was something that that you said in your talk about, it was a quote from Dogen?
Dogen.
Oh, could you say that again? Do you know it?
Yeah, so fools look at themselves as though seeing another. Developed men and women look at others and see themselves.
Yeah. I think that speaks to this discomfort I was feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the categories.
The categories. Mm-hmm. It, I mean, you're a researcher, so you have to do it, right? Yes.
Just put your finger on the problem with what I do.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, really, that's part of what sociological science and psychological science does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because I get it now, and then, of course, the idea is that if we figure this out, will be able to tell people how to live their lives.
Right.
But there are always the outliers and exceptions. So it's such a mix of things. So I think we just have to remember that. Is this one, is this two thing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's really the appreciation of both. So the differentiation, yeah, there are different stages of our life and different work to be done. And each one of us lives in a different universe, and there are these categories. I am a white man, and that has some context that is probably important for me to understand that I am part of some category, and not everybody is part of that category or is treated the same way. Mm-hmm. And yet, as you point out, Melissa, we get lost in these, and we're in real trouble.
And I think there's some comfort in it. Like, we all get excited. Like, the other day, I don't know many of you were here, when Jeff gave his talk and mentioned Swedish culture. And we gave all these examples of it. But then I started to think of all the Swedes I know, and they're a vastly different group. I mean, I think of this one woman we know who's just always excited, and she's really a tall puppy. She gets a lot of shit for it. But you know, we just can't. I feel like every human being is such a mystery. And when I do this thing, and of course I do it, I categorize people. I say, oh yeah, he's that, she's this. There's some way that I'm not in Sangha anymore. I don't know how you do it, Pop. But you're a hero to me, so.
I'll stop. Yeah, right.
Actually, why don't you stop and come here full time?
There could be research with no categories.
Research.
There you go.
There's only one box to fill out.
Every box gets checked. Christine's out.
Out. Christine's, yeah.
Yes, well, I'm going to make a comment about getting older. But as I listened to you, Melissa, and I was here for the Swede conversation, and my whole Swedish family is definitely very different from what Jeff described. It was actually your comment helped me feel into it deeper. It was getting so immobilized by a physical condition in a way I'd never been immobilized before, that has been one of the greatest gifts of letting go of attachment to form and feeling this light and this something way beyond form. And with that, and I think it was the first time we talked about feeling more out in the world, like the open heart is its own protection. I don't even know how it all fits. And in that, finding that conversations are so nourishing, and I just didn't make time for long conversations before, where something's being created in two people when that synergy is happening. There aren't two people anymore, and they walk away with a piece of the other in a way I don't understand. So getting that time to just see what it was like with that brick and dropping it being forced to drop it. I'm seeing nourishment, deep nourishment, in things that our culture doesn't value.
Yeah, this doing nothing, this visiting, this social, you know, it seems that people used to do that more, and we don't. There's something for human beings about being with each other that is wildly and deeply nourishing, that's not quantifiable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In this culture of isolation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We stay home, we drink, we do drugs, we watch TV all by ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't go out and see people. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I love the temple, because people do come out. Mm-hmm. So they don't really see each other, but they... I guess it's a span for 5 minutes. It's a way to be social.
What I just add to that, Melissa, is that coming here is probably the place where I feel most comfortable dropping the box away, you know, getting out, stepping out of the box, or, you know, leaving that persona at the doorstep. That's the gift that you get. It's here.
Well, and I think to have a place, and I think this is part of the wisdom of so many spiritual paths, is that we need refuge, we need retreat. You know, we get swept away, even though we go out saying, you will not build another self. You know, then the day starts, the phone rings, and, you know, you got to do it. And there's something wonderful about having a physical place we can come to and come back to when you walk in the door and you go, oh yeah, I remember what we do here. I remember now.
What we don't do.
Yeah.
I always remember the first year that we did this long retreat?
Yeah.
And there was a woman, an older woman. She should have been happy. I don't think that was that.
We didn't know the research yet. Apparently she didn't.
She didn't know. But before I told the story about this, I was just thinking that, you know, if we just sat around and did our meditation and then went home and didn't have these Dharma dialogues, I think we're always othering people. So I'm the only one in the room who feels so terrible, or so I'm so clear, I'm so stupid, you know, all this stuff. It could be praise or blame. But just getting it out, you know, we always resonate with what we say. You know, there's like some kind of like, oh yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Let me find a way to say that. Let me find a way to say that. Mm-hmm. Or we argue and we say, no, that's not how it is for me. And then somebody else says, well, yeah, I'm with him. Mm-hmm. And so this woman, what did she say? I can't quite remember.
She said it was after one of the Dharma dialogues. She said, when I came here, I thought I was the only one who suffered. Yeah. Now I know all of you suffer too. And she laughed with delight.
You know, in some ways, I think your theme tonight, Diane, that not to, is also what we need this for, because the world just keeps telling us, no, it really is two. It really is this and that, and separation. And we come back here, and it's like, oh yeah, no, it's all one big thing, you know. But this is the concrete reminder for me of that truth that keeps getting obscured.
Right.
Well, and there's such a delicate balance here, because that oneness, yes, there is this shared humanity, and it's such a blessing to suffer together, you know? to be, it just fundamentally changes everything, but yet each person is an entire universe. Mm-hmm. And if I think I know how it is for you, so I don't listen, well, I know what it's like, then I miss the two-ness. Then I miss this radical difference that I get to hear something outside my own head. Mm-hmm. You know, so both of them so important.
Well, that's the end of the second verse by Woman. All are blessed. All are blessed. Mm-hmm. Is this one? Is this two? Right. Because we really are unique. That's, you know, we're, as I said, we're this complete mysteries, mysterious universes. And
right.
So, and
right.
And the mind can't deal with that. It has to be
right.
You and me, or us and them, mm-hmm. or we're all one, mm-hmm. which is what the first part of the verse is about, too.
Yeah. A couple of times, Melissa, you've alluded to the characteristic that all people have to some extent that probably originated as a protective thing of, you know, this is other, and so that's dangerous. That's not mine. And it seems to me that part of what Zen and our community does is opens up space for something to be other but not dangerous.
That's very
I think
nice.
In the world at large, that category does not exist. Mm-hmm. There's either not other mm-hmm. or dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah. But it's not just the thing that it's not dangerous. It really gives you something that you can't get any other way than interacting with other.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a category collapse.
Yeah,
I like what you're pointing to. And we do maintain our separateness, I think, because it's safe.
Yeah.
It feels safe. I don't think it is safe, but it feels safe to protect our separateness. I'm not like you, I'm not like them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of a way that keeps the self alive, because what would we do without it? But this is another way. You know, could we see separateness as not dangerous? Mm-hmm. So that's what you mean. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I also think that we. The delusion we think we know who other people are, but the other one is that we think we know who we are.
That's the biggest delusion.
The real mystery, who is that? Yeah. You know, who am I? And so we encounter other, you know, the next breath, and being willing to risk that, not to have to keep building the self. Mm-hmm. You know, for fear, what am I going to meet if I don't keep the self up as I know?
Mm-hmm. And also, when we don't hold so tightly to the self, maybe we don't experience that kind of self-inflicted isolation, you know, that the creation of the self does. Which, mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that we don't experience pain of being, with others, and joys, and so we're open to all of that full range, but without this sense of, really contracted isolation, separateness.
Just two things I wanted to say. Thank you, David, for expressing that we don't know who we are. I've been sitting here through this whole talk being very nauseous and not knowing why that is. But I think that gets to it. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. And that's a... that's something I didn't expect to have at this age. And that's an expectation, which I lay on top of what I'm already feeling.
Right?
That because of my age, I'm supposed to be settled and I'm supposed to be happy. And it doesn't mean that I can't be happy and that I can't be settled at a given moment. I don't have to solidify it. The only other thing I wanted to say is that once a month I facilitate this open mic for people with and without disabilities to come together so there are people in a room who would normally really be the other and be quite uncomfortable in each other's presence, feeling either inferior or not quite good enough, or feeling like, what am I going to do if this person starts communicating in a way that I can't deal with? And people have, I think, a remarkable feeling of, safety there, but also a sense of specialness, that this is a special, unusual experience. So I like doing that kind of thing.
Sangha, your own Sangha everywhere, to all kinds of circles of Sangha. Right?
So, thank you all.
Thank you.